You're listening to Gameplay on TSN 1050. We're going all in on the coverage. You can bet on it.
Welcome back, everybody. This is Gameplay. I'm your host, Matthew Cause. If you go to my Twitter account, at mcause56, I throw out this question. What was more impressive? The Leafs and their shootout win over the Vegas Golden Knights. A game where Vegas dominated for much of the evening. Toronto got a bit lucky. And by the way, that happens to all teams. Good teams get lucky. But the Leafs again blew another lead. This one a 3-1 lead and didn't win it until shootout. Shout out to William Nylander. On the other side, the Toronto Raptors, who lose 99-95 to what I think is the best team in the NBA, the Phoenix Suns. And they did it without Gary Trent Jr. and they did it without Scotty Barnes in a game that they nearly won. Well, joining me now to talk all things Raptors, it is Nate Aje, who does some great work with us here at TSN 1050 and also covering the CFL. Nate, thanks so much for joining the show.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me, Matty Cause. I appreciate it any chance I get to talk to you.
Yeah. So let's, you know what I want to start with? I want to start with something silly, but turn it into a real conversation. How soft does Devin Booker look? Getting upset. There's 6.5 seconds left. It's a 2-point game. There's not a fan in the building. And he's upset because the Raptor mascot is standing under behind the net. And Booker gets the refs to shoo the mascot away. To me, that felt pretty soft from Devin Booker.
It's definitely not a great look. It's really a bad look, especially if you know NBA players. Sometimes, you know, they come off as a bit soft because, you know, these foul calls that they get. But yeah. I want to play both sides for a second. All right. The stadium, the arena is completely empty, right? No one's there. The whole game, he's been shooting free throws and no one has appeared. And now the most important free throws he's going to shoot in this game, the mascot appears out of nowhere and starts waving his hands and surprises him. Like, you saw the shot. He kind of shot it a bit short and almost missed it. And he did the same thing on the second one. But the mascot really surprised him, so he tells the ref, "Hey, ref, get this guy out of here." And then he's kind of laughing about it a little bit afterwards, after he already completed his free throws. But it's not a great look. I kind of understand where he's coming from. If I'm in an intense situation and I don't expect something to be there and it's there and it affects the way I perform my job, I'm probably going to say something. But it's not a great look, especially looking from the outside in.
It's not a great look because it's like you've had the biggest advantage. Like, and this sort of gets to my bigger picture here. It's not about the mascot versus Booker. That's a fun thing. That's a meme. That's a Twitter moment. That's a laugh. But you played professional sports.
Yeah.
And this is not a cliche that gas bags like me will throw out there. We've heard from players in every sport and coaches talking about how great it was whenever they got to go and play games in front of fans again. That's been taken away from the Raptors. This is such a disadvantage for them.
Yeah, absolutely. And no, I'd say that too. I mean, some of the best games I've ever felt, you know, great about is when the atmosphere is at its highest, when there's the most amount of people, where there's most on the line. I mean, these games that the Raptors are playing in Toronto are almost like practices, right? And the game we saw yesterday, I mean, it was like a playoff atmosphere type of game. It's disappointing that fans weren't able to attend that because, like we talked about, one of the best teams in the NBA with an up and coming team in Toronto Raptors going toe-to-toe with a team like that, right? So, I mean, it's unfortunate, but not a great look for Booker. Obviously, you know, he it makes me laugh every time I think about it because, you know, playing with no fans, I mean, it's almost like playing in that bubble environment, right? It's really,
yeah.
It changes the landscape of things a whole bunch.
And, I mean, I heard Fred VanVleet afterwards talking about, you know, how good they were playing defensively, which annoyed me because I took the over in that game. The Raptors lose 99-95 to the Suns. I was all over the over. But, like, VanVleet specifically says, like, yeah, that's about as good as defense as we can play without a crowd there. And, you know, I mean, he was basically saying that when the crowd is cheering, it can help you on a couple possessions. And those couple possessions can mean everything. And again, it's just not having that crowd. You know, we wonder about the Raptors' defense being up and down. I think part of it is when you don't have the crowd there, it can be hard to be able to play at the highest level. And I know people are listening going, how can you say that? Yeah, you get paid millions to play at that level. But these people, these players are still human beings.
Absolutely. They're human beings. They have emotions. They feed off of the emotions of other people. Like, generally, when you have an environment that is providing you energy, that's cheering you on, you want to do better because, you know, you have people behind you. But like Fred VanVleet said, like, obviously the Raptors' defense has been up and down, even during the six-game winning streak. But, you know, like, you made a great point about not having fans there, and that is definitely a big thing. Like, you see in the playoff atmospheres when the fans are chanting defense, like, guys rise to the occasion. And, you know, a team like Phoenix, like, they're a team that, like you said, best team in the NBA, one of the best teams in the NBA. They bring it night in and night out. So the Raptors, they're a young team. They can look to a team like Phoenix as to how to conduct themselves on a night-in, night-out basis, not just against the best teams in the NBA, right? They kind of showed what they're capable of night-in, night-out. Obviously, they're going to need the fans to be there on nights where they feel sluggish and feel low to kind of propel them to do more. But, you know, it's I thought yesterday's game was encouraging, especially on the defense side, because we haven't seen them play defense like that in a long time. And, you know, with the players on that roster, with the length, the athleticism, the ability to, you know, dig in on that defensive end, you would think it would be like this on a night-in, night-out basis just because, like, they don't have the offensive weapons that that guys that can get you a bucket at any moment, right? So it was impressive to see that kind of defense. You're going to need the crowd to come back to help them out even more.
And I know that this might be weird to say, but I was actually I was more impressed with this loss than I was when the Raptors, their last win against the Pelicans, that needed a 34-foot three-pointer from Fred VanVleet. Like, Phoenix, their big three players played at least 30 minutes. The Raptors were up 90-89 with a minute 41 to go. If the Raptors don't miss 10 free throws, that could be a different game. Like, I look at that loss, and I'm more encouraged by that than I have with some of the wins against some very depleted NBA teams.
Absolutely. That's one thing that I was wondering about, especially during the six-game winning streak, right? They were facing teams that were kind of depleted, like you said, missing guys due to COVID and kind of undermanned, and Toronto was obviously getting healthy at that time. But this was a game where they were missing two starters, right, Gary Trent Jr. and Scottie Barnes, right, two of their better players, and they were able to hang with a Phoenix Suns team that had their entire starting five, right? This starting five was in the NBA Finals last year, right? So last year. So, you know, to go toe-to-toe a team like that says a lot. I was extremely impressed with the ability for them to hang in there. And, you know, obviously missing Gary Trent, one of your better offensive players, and you missed 10 free throws, you know, down the stretch. You know, the game was, you know, right there for the taking, but they just couldn't have one guy step up, right? Obviously, the defense is going to take away the Fred VanVleet and the Pascals, and you need that kind of third guy to step up and make shots when, you know, guys are double-teamed and you're swinging into the corner or the wing, right? And they just didn't have that. But going forward, I mean, you assume that they're going to get healthier. They're going to get their guys back. And, you know, I think Coach Nurse is going to point to those games like, guys, look, we have what it takes. We have the guys in this locker room to get it done against teams, the better teams in this league. So he's going to expect that kind of effort night in, night out. And I think they're heading in the right direction, even in a loss.
Yeah, and hopefully Scottie Barnes and Trent Jr. can return. On one level, the injuries, it's, you know, like knee soreness. It's injuries that don't seem that bad, but as we've seen with the Raptors, sometimes, you know, an injury, like an OG Anunoby, oh, he'll be out for just a little bit of time. And then it's a hip pointer. And then it's like 3 weeks. I'm actually nervous about the next game, which is not for a couple of days, not till the Pistons. Cause one thing we know about Detroit, they can have like a 300 winning percentage against everyone else. But Dwayne Casey is over 500 against the Raptors. There's one thing we know about Detroit is Dwayne Casey always gets that team up.
It was so weird. I know, as you're saying that, the last game I was actually at in the state was against Detroit. And, you know, you're looking at the game, I know the Raptors were missing guys. Goran Dragic was starting. You think the Raptors should dominate games like that. But Detroit, for whatever reason, they get up for games against Toronto Raptors. I don't know if Dwayne Casey is in the pregame locker room, like, hey, guys, you know, like, you give them that extra pep talk. But they get up for these games. And, like you said, they could have lost, like, 30 games before they play the Raptors. But they will get up for that game and give them problems. So I'm actually excited to see that game.
Yeah, back on November 13th, I just looked it up. They lost 127-121. Where was that over last night for me? Hey, Nate, before I let you go, and again, Nate does excellent work with us on both on the Raptors side and also on the CFL side. I was throwing it out there a while ago, like, and every league does this, where they go, how can we get better? Every league does this. And with the CFL, the idea of going to four downs, I thought was just ridiculous. To me, it comes down to, and I don't know how this can happen, because this is about just the economic structure of the game. But can we find a way where free agents, it's three-year deals, four-year deals. To me, it's always the toughest part is every year stars keep changing teams, and it's hard as a fan base to really invest in a player when you know they're in Winnipeg 1 year and then they're in Montreal the next.
Absolutely, and that's one of the biggest things that the players are pushing for, but the teams aren't wanting to give more guarantees. You know, there's no incentive for the players to sign these longer deals, but the league is looking into revenue sharing, and I think that will help with these contracts. And I always propose, like I was telling guys in the league, okay, you don't have to have fully guaranteed contracts, but maybe guarantee maybe 10% of a guy's contract. That will give a guy enough of incentive, like say he's making $100,000. Guarantee 10,000 of it. That will make a guy give a guy enough of an incentive to sign a multi-year deal to stay in the city. Guys want to stay in the city. Like I talk to CFL guys all the time. They want to stay where they play. They want to stay there in the off season, and they want to build things in the outside of football that they can look forward towards after their career. So it's in the league's best interest to look into, you know, how to have players stay longer, because you know people are getting Christmas presents of guys in say Winnipeg, and next you know they're on Toronto, and it's not a great way to build a league for sure. So I think the league definitely needs to, you know, attack that aspect of their business model, but also they need to invest more in gambling. I've been telling all my friends, hey, this team's gonna win, this team's gonna win. They start betting, they're into it. Guys that never thought about the CFL before, they're obviously invested in it because they have money on these games.
Oh, yeah, and then suddenly you're following Derek Taylor and Aaron Karolnik on Twitter. And I remember going to the Argo-Winnipeg game, the one time all year where Winnipeg got greatly outplayed by the Argonauts, and we had the under for Kenny Lawler receiving yards and the over for Eric Rogers receiving yards. We hit on both of them. It was me and seven guys all in their mid-30s going nuts throughout the game, confusing everyone around us.
Yes, I remember that. I remember doing that game and talking about Brady Oliveira and saying, I don't know, this Argos front seven have been playing unbelievable all year. I told a couple of my friends, hey, take the under. And he ended up having, like, I think maybe 13, 14 yards in the game. They were at that game. They were going crazy as well. So that is a big way to get younger people involved in the football. They need capitalize on that.
100%. Use gambling as the bait, and then once they're in the game itself, the players will sell itself after that. Once you get them inside, get them inside the tent, get the barner, get the carnival, get the clowns, get whatever it takes, get everyone in the tent. Once they're in there, most of them won't leave. Hey, Nate, really appreciate it. Thanks so much for joining the show today. All the best.
No problem. Thanks to Maddie. Anytime. I appreciate it.
Love it. Nate Auger, TSN 1050. I say voice, but, you know, covers the team, does play-by-play and stuff with the Argonauts, and again, doing analyst work on the basketball side as well. All right, coming up on the other side of the show, I want to play the Michael Bunting sound again on the Austin Matthews influence on Arizona hockey. And I want to remind everyone, in case you missed the opening of the show, why you're not going to see Austin Matthews leaving for Arizona. And there's an article today. What would it take to lure Austin Matthews home to Arizona? We will chat about how that ain't never going to happen. That's coming up next, right here on Gameplay. Welcome back, everybody. This is Gameplay. I'm your host, Matthew Cause. And the Toronto Maple Leafs taking on the Arizona Coyotes. And producer Conrad, what do you think of this bet? Phil Kessel, plus 271 to score a goal tonight. He's having a lousy season. Arizona. Which one are they now? They're Arizona. I think they're last overall in the NHL. They've been giving up more goals, and they've been putting up fewer shots on goal than any other team in the NHL. But I'm saying Phil Kessel, plus 271, former Leafs scoring on the Leafs. Thoughts on that bet?
You know, I'd sprinkle a little bit on that. You got a backup goalie in there tonight.
Yeah.
I know Arizona's not the best team in the league, but somebody's got to score for them, unless it's a shutout. So I'd say it's got to be Phil Kessel then, right?
Yeah, and let's see. Some of the other bets, plus 149 for Nylander. Matthews minus 125 for any time goal tonight. Like, that just shows you just, A, the hot streak he's on, scored yesterday, had a couple goals the night before against Colorado. I mean, well, the guy's been on a heater for most of the year except for one stretch. But minus 125, ooh, you're giving up a lot there. But it is against his, no, I was going to say his former team. It is against where he grew up. And his line mate, Michael Bunting, talked about it, about the impact that Austin Matthews can have in that area.
Yeah, obviously he's a huge part of that community. He's building the hockey community there tremendously. Obviously, he is one of the best players in the world, and for him to be coming from Arizona, it gives kids someone to look up to and know that he did grow up in Arizona as well, and he's now playing in the NHL. So anything is possible, even though you're in the desert and hockey's not the biggest thing there. So I think he's brought hockey to the desert and has built it up tremendously. So I'm sure he's really excited to go back.
And there is articles today. It's going to happen. Anytime the Coyotes are playing the Leafs, it's going to be the, hey, what would have to happen? Odds that eventually Matthews, when his contract is up, would decide to go back home and to become a big star there. I don't think it's going to happen because, one, for Austin Matthews to really maximize his star potential, it's not going to be in Arizona. Like, if you want to leave Toronto, you go to L.A., you go to New York. Or you stay in Toronto, where you're going to certainly have more, you know, just in terms of media market, size of the city, you know, you could be a massive star here. It's not about going back to Arizona, because that organization, it's a complete mess. I can't think of another team. We were talking about the start of the show. Find me a team that has no idea where it's going to play its games next year. And ownership, this current version of ownership, at one point, they were going to be locked out of the building by the city because they hadn't paid their taxes. It is a long history of dysfunction and of Gary Bettman insisting that it can work. And it's never worked. It is quite fascinating that, you know, just how much Bettman is still trying to make it work in that town. We'll do some more bets with Rob Pozzola. He's going to be joining the show in a little bit at 2:30, and we'll get back into some of my favorite bets. Also, like I threw it out before, but which way would you go with this? And Conrad, would you go with the Colorado Avalanche are plus 550 to win the Stanley Cup, or would you go with the Penguins at plus 1,500?
Ooh, that's a tough one. I mean, you mentioned it earlier. It seems like this could be the Penguins, you know, for lack of a better phrase, last dance, if you will. But the Avalanche, I mean, such a hot team this year. 4, 5, 6 phenomenal players on that roster. It's really tough to bet against them or Tampa at this point, but I don't know. Can you see Tampa doing it 3 years in a row? I kind of see that as highly unlikely, although they probably are still the team to beat in the East, if not Florida. Both teams in Florida, I guess. But yeah, I think I'd ride on Pittsburgh there, Matt.
I just think the value is there. And also, Pittsburgh gets far better goaltending than Colorado. So unless, like, to me, that's why the NHL trade deadline, the number one issue at the NHL trade deadline, what does Colorado do in net? You know, and if you're Colorado, you give up all the draft picks. You just mentioned all the talent on this team. Well, just when you think your window is open, your window can close really super duper fast. And he got all these great players. Now, they're lucky because some of them are signed to these crazy deals. But eventually, Nathan McKinnon's deal is going to come up. Of course, knowing Colorado, they'll just anger Leaf fans. And Nathan McKinnon will say, yeah, I'm taking a team-friendly deal just to bother the rest of us. We'll stay with hockey for a second longer here. Let's hear from Jack Campbell. talking about the need, just what he's expecting from Peter Mrazek.
Yeah, I'm just excited for Peter to get in there and do his thing. And whenever Coach, you know, taps one of us on the shoulder and tells us it's our time, then we'll be ready. And, you know, I'm just excited to just keep working on my game and, you know, the partnership Peter and I have.
And then over to Austin Matthews talking about will fatigue, will it impact the Leafs after, and remember, it was an overtime game, it was a shootout game last night, and now back-to-back. Here was what Austin Matthews had to say.
I mean, I think it's always a factor on back-to-backs, but I think just mentally we got to push through it and do whatever we can tonight and tomorrow to make sure that we're prepared and ready to go. And, you know, that means just taking care of ourselves, getting what we need today, tomorrow morning, and come game time, you know, feeling as good as you can.
Michael Bunting against his old team. How does Peter Mrazek look? Matthews playing in front of friends and family. Is it a hat trick night? I'm expecting to see a bounce back from Tavares. Pretty invisible last night, just out of sync on offense. In fact, here's the hero from last night, William Nylander, talking about, you know, the team's performance and the struggles of his line.
I think our line, we weren't good tonight. We struggled. I mean, they had heavy ozone pressure on us. I mean, made a couple sloppy plays, but I mean, we were able to get the win, which was big, but we got to bear down in those areas.
And yeah, it's like Nylander started great, ended great. In the middle, wasn't really him, but that line certainly was invisible from, I mean, just a pretty invisible night for them, or dragging the team down. And speaking of hockey, where's your interest level, Conrad, on what's going to happen next with Evander Kane?
Well, that polarizing figure in the NHL, that's for sure. I haven't really been following too much. I know that there's three teams, or at least the last I've heard that there's three teams who are kind of in the sweepstakes for him there, with Edmonton probably being the number one and the two Florida teams being two and three. But interest level, I mean, I think there's just going to be a bad ending again with Evander Kane. So as far as the interest level goes, it's just what team is going to get that that negative Nancy there.
I would avoid, and I think, like, Evander Kane feels like the Hail Mary move. Do the Maple Leafs feel like a Hail Mary team? Certainly not at the forward position. I threw out a couple poll questions here. I'll give where are we, the updates. Who had the more impressive performance last night? Leafs beating Vegas in a shootout? Raptors losing close to the Suns? And right now, it's pretty close. Leafs more impressive at 54%, but the Raptors at 46%. The answer for the Leafs is an easy one. They get a W, and Toronto gets the Raptors get the loss. But Phoenix is one of the best teams. Raptors were without Scotty Barnes, Gary Trent Jr. They had a lead with under 2 minutes to go and a game they could have won. As for the Leafs, outshot throughout the night after the first 10 minutes. There was certainly some luck involved. Next poll question. Has every owner in the history of the Arizona / Phoenix Coyotes, have they helped to ensure that Austin Matthews will never play a game in his hometown? Right now, 79% of you are saying yes to that one. And finally, Nick Ritchie, -773 to not score a goal tonight. How would you describe someone putting $773 to win on this ridiculous prop bet? Easy money, stupid, waste of time, or the fourth option, YOLO. Right now, 54% of you are on easy money. We'll get back into sports betting on both the hockey and the NFL side. It is the wild card weekend coming up. Rob Bazzola, professional sports bettor, co-owner of BetStamp, joins the show next, right here on Gameplay. Now, often when you have a guest on, you'll over-exaggerate their worth. If you have a guest on who's promoting a movie or TV show or a book, you'll say you love the movie or the book, and you never read the book, and you didn't really like the movie. But my next guest, here's how I can tell you I'm a fan of his product. It's this app. It's called BetStamp. It's a great one-stop shop for all your information when it comes to betting. He's the co-owner of it. It's Rob Pozzola, and I went to tonight Toronto, Arizona. I click it with my thumb. I go to player prop bets. I look up and down. And then I see a great topic of conversation. And I start my interview with Rob Pezzola by asking, Rob, betting the under for goals scored by Nick Ritchie is at minus 773, according to your app. Is me betting on that, is that easy money, stupid, waste of time, YOLO? Your thoughts on this ridiculous bet?
First and foremost, I'm not a big Nick Ritchie fan. What I will say, though, is they are playing a second half of a back-to-back. So Nick Ritchie is probably going to get a little bit more ice time tonight. You'll see the depth guys utilized a little bit more, especially against a bad team. So normally I wouldn't have a problem. Even paying expensive prices like that, I have no issue with it. But tonight, a situation against Arizona where potentially the Leafs are leading for a lot of the game, they might play their depth guys a little bit more. It's not something I would typically advise for tonight's game.
So what you're saying is plus 378 that Nick Ritchie pots a goal tonight, which would be two goals in three games for him.
That would be. I mean, you basically need Nick Ritchie to score just above one out of every four games against Arizona to make that a valuable bet. I don't necessarily think that he does that in the long run. It's probably a pretty good line if I had to guess. But I haven't really talked about Nick Ritchie props a whole lot, Matt. So I'm just spitballing here.
By the way, I loved the game story you played out, the scenario of which Nick Ritchie could score, and that is actually a pretty logical A to B to C about how it would happen. And honestly, I was just the main point was just, again, to give praise to the app because it is really easy, and I was going up and down on it, and I saw that Nick Ritchie one before the show. I'm like, okay, I got to talk about this on air today because it's one of those ridiculous bets that you see, and then, you know, Darren Ravel tweets out, someone bet $5,000 on Nick Ritchie, and then that becomes a thing. Going to actual real hockey topics with you. Malkin returns. Malkin scores twice. They beat Anaheim 4-1. They have far better goaltending than, say, a team like Colorado. Colorado is at like plus 550. They're the favorite to win the Stanley Cup. The Penguins are plus 1500. This is a team with like 10 UFAs, including Letang and Malkin. So in the locker room, it's like, guys, it's now or never. I throw that out to you, Rob, because I'm tempted on the Penguins at plus 1,500 to win the Stanley Cup. How say you?
I feel I get everything that you're saying there. I think we have to account for the fact that the gauntlet that basically Pittsburgh is going to have to go through in the playoffs in order to get to the Stanley Cup and win it, because their division obviously has Washington, the Rangers, and Carolina. Pretty much all those teams are shoe-ins. I mean, it's only halfway through the year, but those teams are basically shoe-ins to make the playoffs. So regardless of who they get in the first or second round matchup, it's going to be a tough one. Then they're going to get the winner of basically another very tough gauntlet between Florida, Tampa Bay, Toronto, and Boston. So the path for Pittsburgh is through four very good teams in order to win the Stanley Cup, whereas the West is a lot easier for Colorado. Now, with regards to Pittsburgh, there is one bet that I really love in regards to them right now, and I actually placed some of it this morning, which is Tristan Jarry. You can find him still at 18-1 in some spots to win the Vezina. Now, depending on the sportsbook, you're going to do some line shopping. But to me, that's a great bet with the season that he's had so far. Pittsburgh's obviously suffered through a bunch of injuries. So if they get to the end of the year, win the division, they continue on this pace, I think he's going to be right in that conversation with the Vasilevskis and Igor Shesterkin, Jack Campbell. I mean, those guys are probably still priced appropriately in the sense that they should be favored over Jarry. But at the end of the year, if Jarry still has a goals against below two, his save percentage is this high, and his team does this well, he's going to garner some serious consideration.
Yep, you know what? That's a great point about Jarry. I didn't realize the numbers were there. And the bigger picture one is, like, I think sort of the big picture thing about betting on futures for the Stanley Cup, you almost don't want to bet on the East. You know, like, it's like one of those years where the NBA, where eight of the nine best teams were in the West, and then whatever team LeBron was on in the East, you know, those were like the top eight or nine teams in the NBA. It kind of feels that way this year where, you know, the Bruins are like in fourth or fifth in the Atlantic. You know, you got the Leafs, you got Florida with, you know, Conrad or Kodak Black being a big fan, and the Lightning and all these other teams. It feels like you just want to avoid futures if it's on an Eastern team.
I think the East has just so much parity this season, and the eight teams that end up, you know, fighting for that Eastern Conference title are all going to be very good teams. Whereas if you look at the West, you have your Colorado, you have your Vegas, you have Calgary, which I think is like a fringe contender. They could certainly win it and put it all together, but they're not at the same level as the rest of the elite teams. And then you kind of get a drop off to everyone else. So I think certainly the path is easier for a Colorado or a Vegas or potentially a Calgary. I mean, if you really think Edmonton can pull it off, I just don't think that they have the depth to do that. You could go that route as well. But certainly I think the East this year is much more difficult to handicap than the West.
Yeah, by the way, I'm glad you mentioned Calgary on their final show of 2021. I was like, that's the team if you want to, you know, get a value play, look at the Calgary Flames. Every year there's always the team that spoils the playoff party. Why not Jacob Markstrom and the Flames? Moving to the more here and now, the Leafs taking on Arizona. I'll throw out some of the things I like, and you can either agree or disagree. The Leafs on the puck line, I know it's back-to-back, and they were in a shootout, but Arizona truly stinks. So the puck line is at minus 120. And a couple ones I like. Tavares to bounce back. He's at plus 154 to score tonight. Not a great game for him last night. And then what about Phil Kessel? Why not a fun one? He's plus 271 to score against his former team. So those are kind of some of the bets I'm looking at.
Okay, so I'll start with the Leafs puck line. I typically do not like situations where I'm laying 1.5 and some vig on top of it in order to bet that team, especially on the back-to-back. And the reason I don't particularly like it with the Leafs tonight is because you're getting the Peter Mrazek start. This is not anything against Peter Mrazek. I think he's a fine goaltender. He could start probably on at least a third of the teams in the league, but he is a big downgrade from the Jack Campbell that we're seeing right now. So Arizona theoretically could get badly outplayed here and still end up scoring some goals, especially against Mrazek off a long layoff. That's the only reason I don't like it there. I do like the angle on Tavares. I think that's a pretty fair price on him to score, so you're getting roughly 3-2 there. No problem with that. I feel like the Coyotes will probably play a very defensive type of game, but I don't know how long they can stay in that shell. They've been trying that against teams recently. I watched them play a little bit against Nashville the other night, and that kind of just the wheels fell off for them. So I don't mind that one. In terms of the Phil Kessel, not a big fan, but as a Leafs fan personally, I could totally see it. Like, I can see the storyline where Kessel scores a goal or two against Toronto. Maybe it leads to like an overtime win or something. I don't know. It's not something I want to place my money on, but as a Leafs fan, I guess I'm tuned to see stuff like that.
Yeah, we all are. I think that's where my eyes went there. We're joined by co-owner of BetStamp. We're joined by Rob Pizzola, and again, professional sports better. Moving over to the NFL. You know what? Before I start going on about ones I like, is there a line, is there a game or two that you're really leaning towards? Is there one you're going to avoid completely? I'm curious how you're approaching. And again, there's still a bunch of days until the weekend, but how you're approaching Wild Card Weekend.
I placed one bet for Wild Card Weekend. That doesn't mean I'm only going to have one bet, but it was on the Raiders when they were +6. I wanted to make sure I got the +6 on the Raiders because there's obviously a significant difference once it moves off to 5.5. 6 is a semi-key number. I don't like the Las Vegas Raiders. It's a shame, in my opinion, that we have to see the Raiders and the Steelers in the playoff instead of a team like the Chargers. But regardless, I think this is actually a tough matchup for the Bengals. And people look at the previous meeting this year, they're going to see that 32-13 final score for Cincinnati. That game was 16-13 with 5 minutes left, and then the Bengals scored a bunch in garbage time. But Las Vegas was +1.8 net yards per play in that game. The Bengals offense averaged just over 4 yards per play. That was their lowest total this entire season. This is a defense that will give them trouble, and this is the type of defense that's given the Bengals trouble all year because Joe Burrow is great against the blitz. He's got the best numbers in the league against the blitz this season, but the Raiders blitz lower than any other team in the NFL because they can generate pressure with Max Crosby, Yannick Ngakoue, who are very good edge rushers. So they drop a lot of guys into coverage. They can get after the quarterback. That's not really conducive to what Cincinnati can do well on offense. And on top of that, the Raiders have a top 10 run defense in terms of DVOA, success rate, pretty much any metric you want to measure run defense. So it's not like the Bengals can just pound the rock with Joe Mixon either. So you're asking them to lay, you know, you need them to win by 6-7 points in order to win a bet. And I just don't see that big a margin between these two teams. So Las Vegas is my favorite side this week. I made this point spread in this game 4. So I still think there's a little bit of value with the Raiders.
I think my only concern, one is logical, one is illogical. The logical one, they're 5-5 in their last 10. Those five wins have been by a total of 15 points. But also, Rob, how can I have any faith in a team to even cover the spread, any team that lost to the Giants this year?
Well, that's true. I mean, there's been a couple of them. The Eagles lost to the Giants this year. They'd be playing against the Bucs this week as well. There's been some bad losses, for sure. I get it. I can completely get the hesitation with the Raiders, but let's not forget, too, I mean, they've had some big wins. They went to Dallas on Thanksgiving, and they won that game 36-33. So, I mean, over the course of an 18-week season, you're going to get teams that put in some stinkers and teams that put in some great games. I just don't like the matchup for Cincinnati. I feel like that offensive line is very bad, and you go up against a really good pass rush. The Raiders don't need to score a ton to cover this game. They are going to have to score a little bit, but I feel like Las Vegas is being a little bit undersold because people just don't really want to see them in the playoffs, so they don't really want to bet them.
Oh, yeah, and the Max Crosby point is a great one. He was fantastic in that Sunday nighter, and the Bengals decided they had to choose protect our quarterback or get him a weapon, and it worked out with Ja'Marr Chase. But we saw Joe Burrow the last couple of weeks. The guy's getting hit a ton. I think last one for you there, Rob. If I'm looking at underdogs, and I'm probably with everyone else on this one, especially if Trent Brown comes back, who Pro Football Focus has as the best line offensive lineman in the NFL, I love the 49ers as a three-point underdog in Dallas. That's you know, and I think I'm not alone, and I'm just curious your thoughts.
You're talking to a Dallas Cowboys fan. I was watching last week's games and looking at the scenario generator and saying, I hope the Cowboys don't play the 49ers in the first week. I'd like to see the Rams. I'd like to see the Cardinals. I think there's a lot of things that the 49ers do well where they will match up very well against this Dallas defense, particularly where you look at the Cowboys defense. They're bad in coverage over the middle of the field. They have Leighton Vander Esch and Keanu Neal as their middle linebackers who are horrible in coverage. And now you have George Kittle, who is just a beast over the middle of the field. Jimmy G loves to throw over the middle of the field. So I think that works in the 49ers' favor. The problem for me is I like to bet numbers and not necessarily teams. And we're getting to the point here now where three seems like the right number to me in this game. I think the most likely outcome is Dallas wins this game by exactly three. The 49ers are healthy in the secondary now. They're getting a lot of players back. We're missing against the Rams. But they're also not a very good secondary, and they're going to have to cover a very deep receiving core for the Dallas Cowboys. So I think this is going to be the game of the weekend. I'm most interested in it, not only because my favorite team is playing, but also because these teams haven't played each other this year. It's the only matchup this week where the teams haven't played each other. I think whoever wins this game can make a deep run into the playoffs. I completely understand the 49ers and like wanting to be on them in this game. For me, I just made the game three, so it's going to end up being a pass.
Yeah, no, it's true. It's and you're right. Either of these teams can go on a deep run. Like, it's funny. I like San Fran in this game. I also said earlier in the week, Dallas, there is value if you want to bet on them for our futures. Check out the app. It's called BetStamp. Rob Pezzola, co-owner of it, professional sports bettor. Always appreciate it, Rob. Thanks so much for joining the show.
All right, Matt. Good luck with your bets this week.
You as well. Take care. That is Rob Pezzola. All right, on the other side, let's go over some of the things we saw last night in one of the more impressive games we've seen from the Raptors, and it was a game that they lost. That is coming up in a moment. I'm Matthew Kaws. You are listening to Gameplay right here on TSN 1050. Let's hear from the NBA Eastern Conference Player of the Week, Fred VanVleet. This is Game Play. I'm your host, Matthew Kaws. By the way, a reminder, the Raptors head coach, Nick Nurse, will be on Overdrive today at 5:05. And here is Fred saying you got to appreciate the fight that the team showed last night against the Phoenix Suns.
You just got to appreciate the fight, you know, be proud of the fight. That was a really intense, tough game. It's probably as good as it gets without a crowd in there. They certainly raised the level. That's the reason why they have the best record in the NBA is because they play that way every night. And, you know, I thought that we answered the call. I thought that, you know, it was a good test for us. Obviously, we didn't come out with the victory, but we appreciate the fight. There's a lot of things you could have cleaned up. Didn't shoot the three well enough, left 10 free throws on the board. But force that team into 20 turnovers, you get 22 offensive rebounds. You know, that sounds like a good night. Again, just probably ran out of juice there on some of the shots, just not falling there late.
In terms of threes, the Raptors shot 8 for 37. So basically just under 22%. But the big number is 15 of 25. They took 25 free throws. They made 15. They missed 10. No Scottie Barnes, no Gary Trent Jr., bad at the free throw line, and bad in terms of three-pointers. Raptors also didn't take advantage of offensive rebounds. They had 22 offensive rebounds, but they had only 16 second-chance points. Like, in the end, and I don't know about you, Conrad, how much of the game you were able to catch, but that was a game where I'm both disappointed that they lost, but at the same point, I don't really have much anger. In fact, I feel good. I'd feel good about it as a Raptors fan. They led by 1 with a minute 41 to go. And here's the key. Phoenix had everyone there. Booker was there. Ayton was there. Paul was there. All three played at least 30 minutes. You know, and they got killed. Like, even though they had rebounded Phoenix and did well, they got killed late on offensive rebounds. Go back and look at it. It was a Devin Booker offensive rebound. This was like in the last 90 seconds. Suns get a couple more offensive team rebounds. Leads to Booker hitting a jumper, giving the Suns a 91-90 lead, a lead they would not relinquish. On the positive side, not the most efficient game for Pascal Siakam, 10 of 23, but 22 points, 7 rebounds, 7 assists, and 3 steals. But as I said before, the best version of Siakam is when the free throw attempts greatly, or not even greatly, just as long as there are more free throw attempts than there are three-point attempts. Last night, 0 for 5 from 3, went to the free throw line only 4 times. I enjoyed the night of OG Anunoby, 25 points, 9 of 20 shooting, guarding Devin Booker for a bunch of the night. And they wasted a great game from Chris Boucher, who had 13 points, 16 rebounds, and 3 blocks. And this is one of the best things, and especially when Scottie Barnes comes back, about having Kem Birch healthy, having Siakam healthy, having Precious Achiuwa, is what you can do with Chris Boucher is go, okay, 18 to 20 minutes, that's all. But I want you to go nuts for those 18, 20 minutes. In fact, let's hear from Chris Boucher talking about studying the work of one Dennis Rodman.
I'm at this point where, like, I just want to go over there and play hard. And, I mean, that's what the team needs. And it's a lot easier when you kind of know what you have to do. And I go into the game thinking the same way. A lot of people have been seeing, I've been posting Dennis Rodman every day. That's who I study the most. I'm trying to see what it is, what I could do. I feel like I have the same energy as when he played, and I kind of relate to him a lot. So with the ups and downs and all, so we at this point now, I'm just playing like him and trying to bring energy, everything that demands effort, whatever. That's what I'm trying to do now.
And we saw last night, we saw a bounce back. Boucher was not that good early on in this year. Maybe that was too many minutes. You know, it's like, how do you want the porridge? It's a Goldilocks and a Three Little Bears thing. You know, you don't want it too cold, don't want it too hot, just right. And to me, Boucher just right is like 18 to 20 minutes. So the Raptors losing 99-95 to the Phoenix Suns. And a bad night for me. I thought the Suns would win and cover the 4.5-point spread, but I took the over, so that is a whammy by me. And, you know, I never try in this show just to go, hey, look where I was right, look where it's right. I also want to talk about where I was wrong. I'm seeing one player prop bet, and this is coming down from ESPN. The Hornets are at Philly, and Joel Embiid over 30.5 points at minus 110. He scored 31 or more in 7 straight games, 9 of his last 10. And Joel Embiid has faced Charlotte twice this year. He has scored 43 in one meeting. He scored 32 in another. So at minus 110, so you bet $110, you win 100 for Joel Embiid to go over 30.5. And if that one scares you, I don't have the numbers in front of me, but take a look at combined points, rebounds, or even points, rebounds, and assists against Charlotte. That, I mean, it's not the stoutest defense out there, so that's not a bad bet to take. And then final thought once again, and Conrad, I'm sure in agreement here, there is nothing more shameful than Devin Booker, 6 seconds to go, 2-point game, and getting annoyed at the Raptor mascot and getting security to wave him away from behind, underneath the net. Shame on Devin Booker. You're a professional, and you've played in front of packed houses. The Raptors, no fans there, and Devin Booker was able to get the mascot waved away. Soft, weak moment from Devin Booker.
Yeah, Matt, I think I've come to a bit of a solution for this, and it's just that you need to multiply the Raptor mascot by 10 to 15, and then you can't kick all of them out, can you? Or you just get one by one kicked out, you use them at clutch moments throughout the game, and then you're down to your last Raptor mascot at the end of the game when you need them.
Or how about this? Get 999 N95 masks. Get 999 fully vaccinated, boosted, whatever, Raptor mascots, and get them all out there under the net. There's no fans in attendance right now except for, you know, some close family of the players. And you'll see Masai Ujiri sitting beside on his own and just surrounded by empty seats by himself. That's what I was trying to say. I can't believe I couldn't say by himself. Like, you see him there, and it looks ridiculous. It is such a disadvantage. It is such a disadvantage for the Toronto Raptors. So why not 999 Raptor mascots under the bench trying to disrupt the other team? I don't know about you, Conrad. That's not asking too much.
No, not at all. And some of those seats are the fold-out ones as well, so they make a little bit more sound when you stomp on them. You get those mascots jumping up and down, lots of extra noise, all sorts of distractions for Devin Booker next time he comes to town.
Exactly. Raptors' next game is against the Pistons, and spoiler alert, I'm gonna be telling you, take the Pistons, take the points. Hell, even if you want to do a money line on Detroit, that's the one to do it, because the one thing we know is that Dwayne Casey always has revenge in his heart, and his teams always play up whenever they take on the Toronto Raptors. So one thing we do every Wednesday. Oh, and by the way, a reminder again, Nick Nurse, the head coach of your Toronto Raptors, will be on Overdrive today just after 5 o'clock. We do it every Wednesday. We do This or That. It is led and done by producer Conrad. Conrad, without giving anything away, do you want to give a tease of what is coming up in just a moment?
Oh, there might be a little bit of NFL, or it might be some NHL. And, of course, I always like throwing in a little food because you are our resident food aficionado.
Done. And by the way, off topic, I had next day tacos. Girlfriend went to it was a Mexican joint on Girard, and she brought home a couple tacos, threw them in the oven the next day, still delicious. And one of them, a fish taco. I'm against, I don't think salad the next day ever works as a leftover, and I'm usually against a lot of fish product the next day, but this one, two different types of tacos, both of them worked out really well.
Yeah, I grew up in a household where my mother felt like we were still going through the Depression, so leftovers of any kind is always a go where I come from.
Same thing. I don't understand these people, and I know them. They can't do leftovers. I am all over leftovers. When it comes to leftover food, I feel like it's the 1920s, and I'm as poor as Charlie Basket from Charlie and the Chocolate Factory. I will stretch that leftover as far as it needs to go. All right, on the other side, we got This or That. That is coming up in just a moment. But before any of that, time now for a News Talk 1010 traffic update.